12 minutes past 8, and since last month when Saji Hyun, a district prosecutor, exposed rampant sexual harassment by speaking about her own painful experience, many more have broken their silence. From prosecutors to politicians to poets, the so-called hashtag MeToo movement is spreading like fire now in this country across various industries. Speaking out is a first step, and then the question is, what happens next? Are we going to be able to change the culture, the structure that has allowed offenders to get away with it and may yet, even if we are raising the alarm? Amy Oppenheimer is an attorney and co-author of Investigating Workplace Harassment, How to Be Fair, Thorough and Legal. She's also the founder and past president of the board of the Association of Workplace Investigators and joins us now on the line. Thank you very much for speaking with us.
You're welcome. It's lovely to be here.
And can you just start by broadly bracketing what you mean by workplace sexual harassment? Is that everything from a casual, harmlessly intended remark to something far more serious? Or do you have a narrower definition?
Well, it can be. It does refer to a very broad range of actions, which is one of the things that's problematic, because if you assume that it means something very serious, but in the case that you're talking about, it's not very serious, you don't have a meeting of the minds. It's really any unwanted action that is sexual in nature, whether it's verbal or physical or even visual.
Some people say we should be just calling this gender-based harassment. What do you think of that suggestion?
Well, there's actually a difference between what we consider gender-based harassment and sexual harassment. Because in sexual harassment, there is some sort of component to it that is sexual or romantic, or not just because of someone's gender. So, for example, gender harassment would be treating women in the workplace differently because they're not welcome in that workplace. A woman who comes into a blue-collar environment that's mainly male, and you know, it's what I call the sort of frogs in the locker syndrome of notes or people not talking to her. That would be because of her gender, but it's not sexual. So there is a difference in the terminology that we use in the United States between something that's because of gender and something that is actually sexual, like an innuendo, a request for a date, massaging somebody's shoulder, stroking her hair. All of those would have a sexual connotation. Mm.
So perhaps the confusion stems from the fact that they can sometimes cross over and you can have both happening at the same time. I just wonder if you think that in the workplace there should be zero dating whatsoever. In other words, is asking a colleague out for a date, does that start to constitute harassment sexually?
I don't think that asking a colleague for a date is sexual harassment. And I don't think, and when you say zero tolerance, I think that we should have zero tolerance for things that offend people, but that doesn't mean that everybody gets fired if they offend somebody, because not everything is that serious. We have to learn to live together and work together. So it all depends on the seriousness, but supervisors shouldn't be asking out subordinates, but coworkers, there's nothing wrong with asking somebody out, but if you keep doing it after getting a no, then you're going into some dangerous terrain.
What about when it's intended as being harmless, or the person claims it's being harmless? A joke, for example, that skirts that line. How do you punish that? How do you change that culture?
Well, I'm a bit of an optimist that if you can tackle something head on and somebody does have good intent, that they can change that behavior. And if a joke is not, you know, super graphic and derogatory, but is subject to different interpretations, and it doesn't appear that somebody realized it would offend, just talking to them about it is often going to be enough. Sometimes if you get overly punitive, you have a backlash, and you don't want that either.
For many companies here, it's their obligation to hold education sessions to prevent workplace sexual harassment. I've heard now as well from the ruling party here plans to hold sessions to try to avoid cases like this continuing in the future. Does that really help, though, gathering a group of people together, having someone stand at the front, talk to them about sexual harassment? They must know what's right and wrong, don't they, many of these people?
Well, there's really two questions there. Does training help is one question, and the other question is, do people know what's right and wrong? Unfortunately, I think that people don't always know what's right or wrong, that when we educate men and when they see the media, they don't necessarily understand that things that they say or do are, could be as offensive as they are or as inappropriate at work. So we do end up having to educate people once they're at work. But does training help is a very big question. I mean, we have mandatory training here in California for all supervisors at companies that have more than 50 employees. And I'm on a task force with our state enforcement agency trying to look at whether the training really works or not. I think it depends on the training. Some people feel that bad training can lead to a backlash, that people get resentful. And certainly if you have training that talks down to people or overly simplifies or that is overly punitive in its tenor, that can be a problem.
What would you like to say now as the Me Too movement grows here to victims who might be worried about facing retaliation, having their reputation ruined, or just being too afraid to speak out?
Well, you know, I'd really would rather talk to those in power because they're the ones who can set a tone that can allow those targets of harassment to speak out. I mean, if those fears might be realistic, so who am I to say you should speak out and lose your job? But if employers really take it to heart and take it seriously and start having a work environment that wouldn't tolerate retaliation, that encourages people to come forward, where the people who are in charge are real role models of respect, I think that's going to have a much bigger impact. But on the other hand, look, women coming forward in the United States, in Europe, in Asia, all over the world, in this moment is getting us to talk about it and do something. So certainly those who feel that they can speak out, bravo to them.
A final message for men. Obviously myself goes into that category. I mentioned earlier in the show, there's this presumption that women are somehow going to be more sympathetic and more helpful in powerful circles in dealing with this issue. But I would like to believe that there are a lot of men who could be great allies to victims of sexual harassment as well.
I agree. I think that men want to be allies, and they want to role model respect. And having men interrupt behavior that's inappropriate rather than look the other way or be embarrassed for the people involved, you know, what bystanders can do, I think, is tremendous. And that sets a tone for everybody, and respectful men are a strong ally for women, and there's a lot that men can do.
Thank you so much, Amy Oppenheimer. Anyone who wants to check out that book, again, the title is Investigating Workplace Harassment, How to Be Fair, Thorough, and Legal. It's good to have your advice with us on today's show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Attorney Amy Oppenheimer.